Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're trying to tackle something pretty fundamental in AI, specifically with large language models, getting inside that black box.
Right. We see them do amazing things, generate text, answer questions.
Yeah, but why they work the way they do, or sometimes, crucially, why they fail, that's often still a mystery, isn't it?
Totally. And that lack of understanding, it's a real roadblock for fixing problems, for trusting them, especially for safety. We know the math, kind of, but the emergent behavior,
yeah,
still pretty opaque.
Which is why the research we're digging into today feels so important. We're looking at some key papers from Anthropic. They're exploring this technique called dictionary learning.
Yeah, as a potential way to shed some light on those internal workings.
Exactly. So our mission for this deep dive is basically, what do these papers tell us about dictionary learning, and can it really help make these LLMs less, well, black boxy?
And a big part of their argument, you know, is that maybe looking at single neurons isn't the best way forward.
Ah, right. They talk about features instead, like patterns of activity.
Precisely. These coordinated activations across neurons, they suggest these might be the more fundamental units of computation and dictionary learning. That's the tool they're proposing to actually find these features.
Okay, so dictionary learning. Let's unpack that. In this LLM context, what are we actually talking about?
Well, the Anthropic researchers have adapted it, as I mentioned, from more traditional machine learning. At its heart, it's always been about finding recurring patterns in data.
Okay.
But here, the data is, like, the incredibly complex patterns of neuron activations inside the model as it's processing text. Those recurring patterns. Those are the features we're after.
Right. So not just is neuron 57 on or off, but more like when neurons 12, 83, and 205 light up together in this specific way, that kind of thing.
Exactly that. Think of it maybe like letters and words.
Yeah.
Letters combine to make words, right? And words make sentences.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you could maybe think of neurons combining to make these features, and then the overall internal state of the model is like a combination of active features.
Yeah.
It's moving up a level of abstraction.
Okay, that analogy helps. So how do they actually find these features in the first place? The papers mention sparse autoencoders.
Right. That's the specific algorithm they use for what they call weak dictionary learning. The goal is to find a set of features that's both overcomplete and sparse.
Overcomplete and sparse. Okay, what do those mean here?
So overcomplete means they're actually trying to find more features than there are neurons in the layer they're looking at.
Wait, more features than neurons? How does that work? Seems counterintuitive.
It does. And it ties into this really interesting idea called superposition. The hypothesis is that neural networks can represent more concepts or features than they have physical neurons by using, well, overlapping representation.
Overlapping, like using the same neurons for multiple features.
Kind of. Think of it like linear combinations of neurons. The network learns to pack more information into the available neurons. And the sparse part is key here. Sparse means each feature is only active, or fires, in a relatively small number of specific situations. Because they're sparse, the model can, in theory, disentangle which features are active, even though they're represented using overlapping sets of neurons.
Ah, so the sparsity helps pull apart these overlapping signals.
Exactly. And the sparse autoencoder is basically the tool they're using to do that pulling apart, to uncover those hidden features that superposition creates.
Got it. Okay, so we're moving from neurons, which you said can be hard to interpret, to these features. Why is that considered a better approach? What makes features better units for understanding?
Well, the core argument in the research is that if you look at a single neuron, its activity often seems kind of random, or at least not consistently tied to one clear concept. It might fire for seemingly unrelated inputs.
Right, making it really hard to say this neuron means X.
Exactly. It's like trying to understand a car engine just by looking at one single bolt. You don't see how it fits into the bigger picture.
That makes sense. Like trying to read by looking at isolated letters.
Perfect analogy. And they give this really striking example in the papers. They took a transformer layer, one with 512 neurons.
Okay.
Using dictionary learning, they decomposed its activity into over 4,000 features.
Wow, 4,000 from 512.
Yeah, and these features represented much clearer concepts, things like, you know, DNA sequences, bits of legal jargon, HTTP requests, even specific scripts like Arabic or concepts like nutritional information, stuff you just couldn't see at the neuron level.
That's a huge difference in clarity.
Yeah.
So the features actually corresponded to meaningful ideas.
That's what they found. And they tested this pretty rigorously. They did blinded evaluations where they asked people to try and interpret what individual neurons were doing versus what the learned features were doing.
Yes.
The features were rated as significantly more interpretable. Consistently.
Okay, that's strong evidence. They also mentioned using LLMs themselves to interpret these features, like an auto-interpretability thing.
Yeah, that was another neat approach. They basically fed examples of when a feature was active to a large language model, like GPT-4, and asked it to generate a short description of what the feature might represent.
Okay.
Then they tested if another model could predict when the feature would activate, just based on that generated description. And again, the features came out way ahead of individual neurons. It suggests the features are capturing something more systematic, more describable.
Right, so the method finds these features, and they seem genuinely more interpretable. Let's get concrete. What are some of the specific examples they highlight in the sources?
Sure. They dive into a few really interesting ones. Let's start with the Arabic script feature.
Okay.
They found a feature that, well, strongly and specifically activates when the model encounters Arabic text. They even used a computational method, a proxy, to double check this, basically estimating if a text chunk is Arabic.
And did activating this feature change the model's behavior, like what it predicted next?
Yes, absolutely. When this feature was active, the model became more likely to predict Arabic script tokens next. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And importantly, this wasn't just one neuron doing all the work. The feature's activation was spread across multiple neurons.
Ah, so definitely not a grandmother neuron situation.
Exactly. And here's something really cool. They found a very similar feature in a completely different model instance, same architecture, but trained from scratch with a different random starting point.
So it's potentially universal. It pops up independently.
That's what it suggests. It hints that these features might be capturing fundamental ways these models learn to process certain types of data, not just quirks of one specific training run, like finding building blocks.
That universality idea is pretty compelling. What other examples did they find?
Another one was a DNA sequence feature.
Okay, like A, T, C, G.
Yep. It activated for uppercase strings of those letters. They use a proxy for this too. Though interestingly, the feature sometimes picked up on DNA sequences even when the proxy missed them, like if there were spaces or prefixes.
Huh. So maybe it learned a slightly more nuanced pattern.
Perhaps. And just like the Arabic feature, activating it made the model more likely to predict nucleotide tokens next. Also spread across neurons, also showed universality.
Scripts, biology, any others stand out?
They were quite excited about a Base64 string feature.
Why the excitement there?
Well, partly because some earlier work in a different kind of model had actually found a single neuron that seemed to respond to Base64. So finding a Base64 feature here hinted at maybe stronger universality across different architectures.
Ah, connecting the dots.
Right. And this feature, again, activated specifically for Base64 characters, made the model more likely to output Base64 tokens, wasn't a single neuron, and showed up in different training runs. It really feels like the model developed these little internal detectors.
Like little specialists for different data types?
That's a good way to put it. And they briefly mentioned a Hebrew script feature, too.
Wow.
With all the same properties, specificity, downstream effects, distributed activation, universality. These case studies really drive home how dictionary learning can surface these meaningful computational units.
Okay, so those detailed examples are really illustrative. But they found thousands of features, right? How did they assess the interpretability of all the others? They couldn't do a deep dive on every single one?
No, definitely not practical. So they used broader methods for that global view. We touched on the human evaluations. They did that on a random sample, comparing features to neurons, and features consistently won out on interpretability.
Right. And the automated methods, how do they scale those up?
They applied those across the board. So using the large language model to generate explanations for, you know, thousands of features, and then testing predictability based on those explanations, features were significantly more predictable. And also the other test, using the explanation to predict if certain output tokens were likely when the feature was active. Again, features performed much better than neurons.
It sounds pretty convincing overall. Did they mention any caveats or limitations to this global picture?
Yeah, they did point out a couple of things. One was that feature activations often skewed low, and these very low activation levels were sometimes harder to interpret clearly.
Hmm, okay.
But they also noted that the stronger activations which likely have more impact on the model's output, tended to be the more interpretable ones. So maybe the most important signals are clearer.
That makes sense. Anything else?
Just that their main evaluation sampled features uniformly. It's possible that the most crucial features for the model's core abilities might have different interpretability properties, but they said their initial check suggested that even more important features seemed pretty interpretable too.
Okay, good context. So this is all super interesting for understanding what the features are, but how much of the model's actual work do these features explain? Are we just explaining a tiny fraction, or is it substantial?
That's a really critical question. And the results here were actually quite striking. For the main model they studied closely, they found that these learned features could account for roughly 79% of the log likelihood loss reduction that the MLP layer provides.
79%? Wow, that's a lot. That sounds like most of what that layer is doing is captured by these features.
It's a really significant chunk. And they suggested this could potentially go even higher if they learned more features or tweaked the sparsity settings.
Right.
And crucially, it's not just a correlation. They did causal experiments like activating a feature and seeing the expected behavior increase, or removing a feature, ablating it and seeing the related probabilities drop. That strongly suggests this loss recovery reflects actual mechanism, not just some statistical fluke.
Okay, that causal link is important. But hang on, could these features just be reflecting patterns in the training data itself, rather than how the model actually computes things?
Ah, a classic question in interpretability.
Yeah.
Does it tell us about the model or just the data? It's a great point.
Yeah.
To test this, they did a really clever control experiment. They took a model, but before doing dictionary learning, they completely randomized its internal weights, just shuffled everything up.
Okay, so the architecture's there, but the learned connections are gone.
Exactly. Then they ran dictionary learning on that randomized model.
Mm.
The idea was, if the features are just in the data, they should still find them, right?
Makes sense. What happened?
Well, the features they got from the randomized model were almost entirely uninterpretable, except for maybe some trivial ones corresponding to single words, like just the token itself.
Ah.
All the interesting concept level features, the DNA, the Base64, the scripts, they disappeared.
So that really points to the learning process creating the structure that the features represent.
Precisely. It suggests the model training organizes the activations in a way that dictionary learning can then pick up on. And like we said, the fact that the features from the trained model have those downstream causal effects, which aren't part of the dictionary learning objective, further confirms the model is actually using these learned feature representations.
Okay, that distinction feels key. These features seem to offer real insights into the model's process. So stepping back a bit, what broader things did they learn about how neural networks operate the phenomenology, as they call it?
Yeah, they uncovered some interesting patterns. One was the common appearance of these context features, like the DNA or Base64 ones that react to the surrounding text, and also token in context features.
Token in context, like what?
An example they gave was a feature that seemed to fire specifically for the word the, but only when it appeared in, say, a mathematical text.
Huh, interesting. Specific.
Very. Another big one was this phenomenon they called feature splitting.
Feature splitting.
Yeah, so as they increased the number of features they tried to learn, like turning up the dial on the dictionary learning, broader features would often split into several more specific ones, like zooming in with a microscope.
Can you give an example of that splitting?
Sure, let's go back to Base64. If they looked for a smaller number of features, they might find one general Base64 detector.
Right.
But if they aimed for a larger dictionary of features, that single feature might split. Maybe into one for Base64 letters, one for Base64 digits, maybe even one specifically for Base64 that's encoding ASCII characters.
Wow. So changing the number of features gives you different levels of resolution on the model's internal concepts.
Exactly. Different dictionary sizes offer different views, different granularities of understanding. They saw similar splitting for features related to math or physics concepts, breaking down into more specific subtopics.
That's a really powerful idea. Does it explain anything else?
It might help explain why sometimes, with smaller dictionaries, you see features that just seem to represent single tokens. Maybe those are just broader concepts waiting to be split into more meaningful parts when you look closer.
Fascinating. Any other cool phenomena?
They also observed patterns that looked a bit like simple computational machines, finite state automata, not explicitly programmed, of course.
Oh, so.
Well, we're activating one feature makes a certain kind of token likely, and that token then triggers another specific feature in the next step and so on. They saw this for things like recognizing or generating text in all caps snake case, or handling specific Unicode character sets like Camel, these little circuits seem to emerge just from the model learning to predict text.
That's wild. Complex behavior is just emerging from feature interactions via the text stream.
Yeah. And they even noted some preliminary signs with very large feature dictionaries that looked like the model might be memorizing specific phrases, potentially giving a mechanistic hint about how memorization might happen via superposition.
Okay, let's circle back to universality. You mentioned similar features popping up independently. Did they try to quantify that more rigorously?
They did. They set up a direct comparison, took two identical one-layer models, trained them separately with different random seeds, ran dictionary learning on both.
Okay.
Then, for each feature in model A, they found the feature in model B whose activations were most similar across a big data set. They calculated the correlation.
And the result.
The median activation correlation for these best matched pairs was 0.72, which is, you know, pretty high. And significantly higher than if you just compared random neurons between the two models.
So the features are much more consistent across training runs than the underlying neurons.
Exactly. That really strengthens the case for features being a more fundamental level of analysis.
Did they look at anything besides just the activation patterns?
Yeah, they also looked at the logic weights, basically, how much each feature influences the final prediction of the next word. They found that sometimes, even if activation patterns were similar, the logic weights could differ a bit, especially for less common predictions.
Meaning similar triggers, but slightly different downstream effects.
Potentially, yes. So they came up with a combined metric called attribution similarity, factoring in both activations and logit effects. And they found this correlated pretty well with just the activation similarity, suggesting activation correlation is actually a decent proxy for overall feature similarity here.
And did this connect to work by other research groups?
Definitely. They pointed out similar features found in other studies using different models or slightly different techniques. Base64, hexadecimal features, German language detectors, even abstract parallels to features in multimodal models. It all points towards these features being somewhat robust fundamental discoveries.
This feels like a really promising direction then. So wrapping up, what did the researchers see as the main next steps or challenges? Where does this field go from here?
Well, a big one is just pure engineering. Scaling these sparse autoencoders up. Applying them effectively to the truly huge frontier models we see today, that's a major computational hurdle.
Right, bigger models, potentially vastly more features to find.
Exactly. Another key question is about attention layers. Most of this work focused on the ML key layers in transformers. Can similar methods unlock the secrets of attention? That's a big open area. And then there's the theory. We need a deeper understanding of superposition itself. How do features cluster? Do they form more complex structures, like higher dimensional manifolds? Lots of theoretical work still needed.
And you mentioned those token and context features earlier.
Right. That's another puzzle. Are they fundamental to how transformers work, creating these highly specific local codes for prediction? Or are they maybe an artifact of the dictionary learning process itself? Still debated.
Okay, so definitely no shortage of exciting research avenues still open.
Not at all. But this line of work using dictionary learning has really provided a strong foundation and, I think, a much clearer path forward than we had before.
Well, this has been incredibly insightful. So just to kind of recap the main takeaway, these Anthropic papers argue pretty strongly that dictionary learning lets us get past individual neurons to find these interpretable features.
Right, these patterns hidden by superposition, which seem to be much more meaningful units of computation.
And we've seen the evidence for their interpretability, their causal effects on what the model does, and this really interesting universality across different models.
And having this method, this way to decompose the model into understandable parts, feels absolutely vital. Is how we might start to properly diagnose problems, fix them, and build more confidence in the safety and reliability of these incredibly powerful systems.
It really leaves you thinking, doesn't it? If these models are built on such a complex, hidden landscape of thousands, maybe millions, of these interacting features, what does that mean for what they might be capable of? And how do we even begin to ensure they're safe and aligned as they get bigger and bigger?
Huge questions. And the answers likely lie deeper within these internal structures.
Definitely food for thought. For anyone listening who wants to dive deeper themselves, we'll put links to the Anthropic research papers in the show notes. They're well worth a read. Thanks so much for joining us on the deep dive for this exploration.